The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
There's the head, of course.
He never takes it off.
You think it's weird? Would it help if I said my facial expressions out loud? Welcoming smile.
Delighted look. But what goes on inside the head inside that head?
I find this inspiring.
Is music.
Something is pressing something is!
Frank, people should know about you. You should be famous.
Flattered grin. Followed by a bashful half-smile.
Stop saying your facial expressions out loud. It's extremely annoying.
We've been offered a really important gig, South by Southwest, in Texas.
People are interested in us.
We could be big.
What game are you playing, filling Frank's head with these ideas?
I can't hear you over the sound of the bubbles.
Someone needs to punch you in the face.
Here we go.
It's gonna be huge.
You gotta come see us tomorrow night. I promise we'll be Vanilla.
Frank's not okay.
Frank, come back!
With all his issues, 100% sanest cat I've ever met.
Okay. The head. Take it off.
I have a certificate.
Take it off!
Here it is. My most likable song ever.
Coca-Cola, lipstick ring, go dance all night, kiss me, just kiss me, Nefertiti.
This is your most likable song ever?
Yeah.
People will love it.
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Cotola.
The following program may impair your ability to drive or operate machinery, so please use care until you become familiar with the effects of this program upon you and the machinery that you use. Any portion of this program may be duplicated and freely distributed throughout the world, the planet Earth, anywhere else you can get it. I have no idea how far we can shoot out there, okay? Permission is granted to share all this data electronically over the Internet or by any mechanical means that you dare do for so devise. Feel free to enjoy it and to think freely as you do. Although this program will have no tangible effects on everyday life on Earth, for darn sure, its implications for science, philosophy, and even religion are profound. And now, back to our program.
Keep your shirt on. Like you need your shirt. You don't need your shirt. You don't need anything except your ears or the vibrations that translate into sound. Because this is Cotolo Chronicles, and it's live whether you like it or not. I'm Frank Cotola, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. Don't you go away, because I'm here to put them all down and raise them all up. Let's go. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello, wherever you may be. Can you imagine having being in a bordello, and some of you can, because, well, I guess you could do, be it, it could be in an illegal or a legal bordello, wherever you may be. But imagine this thing coming over the, it coming into the room. I know that there are some bordellos in, where it's legal, in, I guess it's Nevada. I guess it's Nevada. Like, this, you know, this, let's see, which one of those states is it legal? Where I guess you get the certain kind of music, if you'd like it, piped through the speakers. They have speakers, not in the walls, but going through the walls. Like, they have air vents going through the walls, so you can get air and air conditioning. And then they you can request certain music at certain ranches. They call them ranches. But what am I supposed to say? From ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet City, from Othello, and into every ranch? I can't do that. It's a bordello. And bordellos, by the way, in the history of bordellos, there was not just the pairing off of people to have intimate relations paid for. You know, that's weird. It wouldn't be intimate. I guess we're calling it intimate because it's touch on touch. But what I mean is to have, it doesn't have to be intimate. Really, that doesn't have to be intimate. It's intimate in the definitive definition, which is what a definition is definitive. There's no doubt about it. But what I'm saying is imagine if this was coming over right now. That would be something. Who would request this? Hey, you have an old Cotolo Chronicles? Unless it's live, because we are on live when we're on live. Now, we were up in the cloud for 2 weeks, two whole weeks. And that was because of reconstruction, I guess you can call. What else would we call it? Maintenance, reconstruction. What is the other thing? Reparations. No, they're not reparations. Well, repairing. That is reparations or repairing. I think that could fit for this also. But getting this place in order, because there are machines that aren't working, there are things that have to go on because of heating and water and the usual things that most abodes and an abode, you can have an office in an abode, you know, and places that don't even broadcast have to have water, heat, you know, something like that. So we brought in plumbers to take care of some things. I know my dad rolls over I guess he doesn't roll over in his grave. My father, it's a big grave. My father would not roll over in his grave to know that I hired plumbers, because my father was a plumber for as long as he lived. And, he wouldn't, because he never wanted me to be a plumber. That's a whole other story in itself. And a lot of stories are to come here on Cotolo Chronicles. Now, before I get into some stuff that's happening here now, I have a list. I actually made a list, and it's been sitting around for 2 weeks because there's some stuff happening that I want to talk about. And I want to zero in on one of them because it's related to a show that somebody wanted to hear a while back. And as you know, I will insert portions of shows gone by for people who have not heard those shows related to topics that may still be relatable, which is what we're doing here. But I'm going to talk about it first, and then I'm going to slip in a piece of an older show. Oh, boy, an older show. We're talking 99 is 18. We're talking about 10 years ago. 10 years ago, a show. But I'll get into that in a bit, okay? First, let me tell you that next week we will be here live. We know that. Unless, you know, I mean, barring any super duper things that go wrong or health or whatever that is, we will be shooting during the show portions of a documentary that my son is doing. Doing? That's the wrong way. My son is producing. Can't use those regular words. You should be clear and have the words that explain what you're trying to say. My son will be producing, my son, Ray, by the way, will be producing, while the show is on and during the day and during the next day, a documentary about the first cotolonoscopy, which is going to take place, on the day after the show. But next week during the show, I will be prepping. And I don't know if you know much about, and I don't know much. I know too much about the prepping that a person has to do before they get a colonoscopy. But I've been granted the right to call it a cotolonoscopy because it's me, Frank Cotolo. And, actually no one granted me a right. There's no license or anything. I'm calling it that. And if anybody who has to get one of these wonderful, pre-screening things, these procedures, nothing's cut, nothing's stitched. Hopefully, they're careful with that camera. Nothing cut, nothing stitched. And if there's something cut, it'll be a good thing cut, but it won't cause, you know, it's not like they're ripping me open to go in there. Because technology, as I have talked about a million times here, if not 10, things are different in the digital world. So I got a digital camera, right? Think of that. All the digital camera will be traveling through me. Like, it's like, what was that movie? It's a digital camera as small as you can imagine will be taking the fantastic voyage. Is it fantastic voyage or fantastic journey? That, you know, movie where they make the people small? Fantastic journey? Or voyage, you know, you don't even know it. You know, if you're too young to know it, you don't know it. So they'll be taking that. But what's going to happen, we hope that this will be the footage that we produce, my son produces, we hope it will be fun enough to be a documentary. Now, here's what I'm going to ask everyone to do. Anyone and everyone can do this if you want to be a part of this. You don't know how crazy it's going to get around here. While I'm having to prep, with more liquid than there is in the River Jordan. I have to actually drink as much as is in the River Jordan with special, things in it. Things in it. And I'll be cleaning myself out. That's what the prep amounts to. It's gotta be done. And I won't be able to eat, just Jell-O. So we're gonna help you some Jell-O fun. And I don't know what kind of mood this is going to hurl me into some strange place. No eating. You know, I don't know, but we're going to try to make this as fun as possible. And then, when we get it all together, we're going to edit it. But here's during the show, during the 2 hours that we're live, on the, what is that? The 11th? Yeah. On the 11th of April. During those 2 hours, spread this around to your friends and tell other people too, and we'll be putting it up on the social media thing. You can call in on Skype and talk to me. You could calm me down. You could make me laugh. You can get my mind off food. You do anything you want. You could taunt me. You could taunt me about it. You could do anything you want. All you have to do is get your Skype connection to me. It's not Chronicles. It's Frank.Cotolo, I guess. Why is there a dot between everybody's name? Maybe there's not. Anyway, if you search for Frank Cotolo on Skype, you will find my Skype number and you will be able to call in. Now, it's not essential. The show itself does not lean on that, but we thought it would be fun. We thought it would be fun for people, anyone to call in. And wish me the best, taunt me, make jokes. Cotolonoscopy jokes will be accepted. So there's jokes, information, anything you want. And if we get a lot of people, we promise, if we're getting a lot of Skype call, a lot of people signing up, we will, of course, get you all on. And what that means there is a huge probability that your voice will be in the documentary. So what have you got to lose? Call one, call all, right here, next week, April 11th, Cotolo Chronicles. As I prepare, this is going to be hell. So you'll can have a lot of fun with me, and you could be in the documentary and all that stuff. So that's the 11th. Watch for Cotolo Chronicles blogspot.com and watch on Twitter at Frank Cotolo and at what is he now? Oh, it's funny. It's so funny. Chef Ray RD. Ray Cotolo at Ray Cotolo. I guess it's Chef Ray. I don't know what it is. It's just, it made me laugh so much. It's not all the things he does make me laugh. It just like, it's a, yeah, same thing with me. Now all the things I do make him laugh. So that will be done and you will be doing it and I will do it with you. I keep taking that thing and moving it around. Okay. Now, I'll tell you more. I'm not going to tell you any more about that because we're going to move on with this show and remind you that Cotolo Chronicles is available on other stations and wherever, whatever, True Talk Radio and Light Radio and Dark Radio, whatever. And, you know, I wonder, it would be fun. I think it would be fun if this somehow got onto the dark web. Wouldn't that be something? Why would they put this on the dark web? It's not even legal. It's legal? Maybe, you know, maybe they do have this. Maybe they sell it on the dark web. Maybe they sell pirate copies of Cotolo Chronicles on the dark web. I'm going to have to go do the dark web show again. I'm requesting one of the old shows, too. I don't remember when that happened. I don't remember when any of it happened. But you can find out, too, again, CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. Go to the search engine, put in a topic, put in a name of somebody, and it'll take you to the week and the blurb that was used for a show in that area. And you can request it, fcotolo@yahoo.com. That's a lot of commercials I just did for everything here. That's 20 minutes of the show for the commercials. I got something to get into here because this is wild. Sent to me by a good friend of mine, Ken Bidner, from way back, from high school, Ken, sent this particular piece. I'm going to go into that soon. I want to mention this also in terms of old shows and the fact that, you know, we're here, been here forever. Can't find us on Netflix. I have not been asked to do any kind of special or anything. Just not available, I guess, because I'm me. I'm Frank with the head. Did you hear that thing in the beginning? That was from a movie called Frank. I didn't even know it existed. Guy walking around with Frank's head. What is it? His head. I don't know. But I didn't know it existed, but it does. So maybe you could find that. If Frank is on Netflix, it'll be that movie. He's Frank. And he's a weird guy. Did you hear all that stuff? Okay. So you could look that up too. Listen to this. I got a message and you did too. If you were anywhere near involved, Gmail, not Google, right? Gmail this week is 15 years old. Now, okay, like big deal. Well, you know, 15 years is a long time. If you had a kid when Gmail started, that kid is in his teens now, or her teens, or their teens. If you got twins, they're in their teens. Twins. I said tweens because of teens. I mixed up there. But the show that I'm going to play part The portion of the show I'm going to play for you after I talk about the subject now, and kind of an update of the subject, was from 2009. 9 and 9 is 18 and 1 is 19. So that's 11 years. So when this show aired, Gmail, let's do the math, was only 4 years old. That's it. This show, in its entirety, in its inception, in its conception, in its reception, is older than Gmail and makes it older than an awful lot of things, not things that are awful, many things in cyberspace. That's this show has been here from the beginning, before Netflix was stuck onto. And I was thinking about this too, because I'm watching a lot of things on Netflix, because I get it now through my Xfinity, which is also called Comcast. I have no idea why, you know, all this stuff. It's all pop culture, but, you know, I get it now. And I was thinking, holy Christmas, I said. Let's just say holy crap. Because I have a character who says holy crap all the time in something I'm writing. I like that. It sounds good. It sounds better than, you know, it's bluer rendition. Netflix, when this show was still going on, and probably around the time, there's something else about the piece of the show you're going to hear when it broadcast, I had subscribed to Netflix for a while. Netflix in the beginning of Netflix, and I guess a lot of you people don't know this because you've been getting Netflix for a long time now on the interweb and on your streaming, on your device, on your phone, on your iPad, on your TV, if you have your internet connect, whatever. You people don't remember when Netflix began. It was a rent a movie play. It was so gigantic that it got rid of, that's why there was no more Blockbusters and everything like that. Because that was the end of VHS. And Netflix was this company that began by sending you wherever you were in the United States. I never understood how they did this. It was a kind of drop ship thing. You rented a movie. You went online to the Netflix website. If they had a movie, you would rent it. If they had it, because they had a library, but there were movies they didn't have. The movie, you could have a queue, a list of requested movies you wanted or whatever. And then they would mail it to you. You had to watch it on your own, in your own home. Now, you can still, of course, put on a Netflix movie or show, but they didn't have shows in those days. Remember, they're movies. It was just movies. Netflix. There were no specials produced by Netflix because they were growing as a place. What about a place? As a corporation. It's a gigantic. Now, this is what I mean. Now, they produce their own movies, and not only are they as good as anything you ever saw in the movies when there were movie theaters. Oh, this is the Hallelujah Trail. We warned you. We warned your, like you'd say, we warned your parents because are your parents still listening? We warned your, this is what was going to happen. You know, the institutional, traditional traditional, not just objects, because it was objects, the traditional presentation of so much was going to change down the Hallelujah Trail. We moved down that trail very quickly. Behind us are the bodies. There's analog blood on the tracks. That's how far we have come. And so today, Netflix, what? They spend millions of dollars making movies, and they get stars. Why? Because this is where the audiences come, to their own personal theater, on a device, on an iPad, on a mobile, you know, everything. You know this because you see it, but I want you to know if you're too young to remember. And by the way, you're welcome for the wonderful radio. You are welcome. I know you're thanking me. You know, because I fit in a special place in the history of this streaming broadcast or whatever goes on. So does SRN Media Works and the other stations that are playing this as a repeat. I'm telling you. So why'd I bring up Netflix? I know. Do you think they'll buy the Katolinoski? See, they won't. They don't care. They got big names. They got lots of money, and the thing they don't care about are those of us who paved the way. You're welcome, Netflix, for the wonderful radio. All that was because I said Gmail turned 15, and I love the Google universe. Google, and by the way, Gmail turned 15, and
the Google Plus, which was created to kind of rival Facebook.
Who would want to do that? I don't mean because it's good anyway, but that's another story and another show.
But it died. Google Plus died. And everything was wiped out this week. They sent a notice and they said, yes, stuff on Google Plus. You loaded pictures or what have you. Like anybody loaded original things, right? I don't think so. I didn't go back. I don't remember what I put on. I did open a page. I mean, create a page on Google Plus and nobody came. Nobody did anything. It wasn't, you know, nobody went there and did stuff. It wasn't like Twitter. It wasn't like, even Facebook in the beginning.
So Google said, well, let's forget about this.
So we outlived Google Plus, and I'm not saying that to demean Google, because as I mentioned a while back, not that long ago, I was turned on to Google Drive, what the heck's it called now? The Google Word, Google Docs. Oh boy. Oh God. See what is it going to be like if I haven't eaten? And my mouth is, I'm drinking Gatorade with gunk in it. You gotta be here next week. See, that was a little promo stuck into it. Google Drive. No, there's Google Drive. There's a lot of Google things, but what I'm saying is I love Google. And I moved a lot. I have a Yahoo, fcatolo@yahoo.com, but I have a special, Gmail account too, which I'm not telling you. Which is great, but the world of Google I like, but we're not old. Wait a second. We may be older than Google, because when we started, wasn't Yahoo was on the top of the world? Whew, I'm telling you. Well, happy birthday to Gmail. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Gmail. Happy birthday to you. There were a couple of things I was also going to talk about, but I'm not going to, because I'm going to leave them for other shows. And let me just give you a hint in case you want to know some of the things I'm going to be talking about in the future. I'm going to be talking about guns, and it's not going to be a radical on either side of the aisle, as they say. It's not going to be a radical, promo for guns. The Guns in My Life by Frank Cotolo. It's not even a weird title that I come up with. I'm going to do a whole show on guns. And it's going to be a great show because you'll have to listen to it. Anyway, I'm going to do that. I'm going to start from when I was a kid. It's going to be good, because sometimes, although people tell me more times than not, but I'm going to be humble, because that's the way I feel. Sometimes these shows are really good. We're also going to have more guests, and I'm going to look for more people and some returning people, people in the movies, people out of the movies, people in music, people not music, people who wrote books, people who haven't written books, the whole junk. And also, even though it's the 100th birthday of Lawrence Ferlinghetti, my stomach, I could hear that through the mic. I don't know if it's picking up. I guess I'd have to listen back. Doesn't matter. You hear those weird sounds, But you notice there's no... Already, I've been on like a half hour. And those of you who've listened before, remember that sound in the background, that motor... Right? And it's not happening. Because stuff has been fixed here. Have the sponsors paid for it? No. Because they're no sponsors. But thanks to SRM Media Works and our partners in broadcasting, we are able to give you this, a labor of our love. I'm not saying you shouldn't buy time on. You can buy time. By the way, I want to mention that for anybody who thinks they can't do it, you can do it. If anybody has a product and wants to buy some time on Cotolo Chronicles, get in touch with me. I will do commercials. We had some successful sponsors over the years. Remember Shortstop Jeans? See, people go, no, because the whole audience is turned over. Well, you're welcome for the wonderful radio. Now, let me tell you what Ken Bidner sent me. I hope he wanted me to say his name. Ken sent me, let me move my mic over here. Ken sent me a something that's on a website, and I'm going to open the website so I can talk to you about it. Where is it? I have it here somewhere. Here we go. This was so fascinating to me. Let me get rid of this Frank trailer. There you go. This was so amazing to me that I had to talk. And then listen to this. Peace. This is I'm not going to tell you the website yet, but here it is. This is now an ad, and it's a website where you can, I can't even believe this, and you won't believe it too, and I will not believe it with you when you believe. Listen to this. The original stage, where the ACTS, right? Okay. Of Woodstock, that's 1971. What was it? I don't even know. I'll go through it here on the website with you. Okay. Here's what's going on. Someone, do you hear it? Someone, and we'll find out how by looking through this. Listen to this. Own and touch a piece of the magic before it's all gone. What magic? What are they talking about? What's the magic? The magical centerpiece. Oh, there was, I just had the date. They just had the date. The original stage where legends, oh no, they said that. Legends performed. Musical history was made there. The stage, the physical, that's right, wood and whatever it's made of, objects. This is where they put their feet. Now I'm going to go through this website. They're selling pieces of the stage. Now, you're part of my generation, and you know what I felt. I was at Woodstock. That's what the show 9 years ago, I said 10 years ago, was about. And that's not what it was about. I was talking being at Woodstock and the horror, the horror of this experience. They made a movie out of it. The baby boomers, I was a Woodstock man, you know, the whole thing. Well, you're going to get into that, you know, great, great disappointment to me. And, but this, listen to this. Here it is. Explore the collection. I mean, welcome to Peace of Woodstock stage. Peace, that's P-E-A-C-E. They have the audacity. This is all pop culture, so it's all junk. But I'm going to tell you about it. And they're definitely not going to be sponsors. They're not going to buy time. Peace of Woodstock stage is the name of the movement. But they use peace, P-E-A-C-E. Okay, I'm going to read the copy from this particular thing. It says, each stage collectible, something that was part of the stage where Jimi Hendrix played and Richie Havens played and I don't know if the Jefferson Airplane were there. I don't know. I don't know what, the where, the when, you know. Each stage collectible includes an authenticated piece of the historic 1969 Woodstock Music and Art Fair stage. Now it's called an art fair, and I don't know why, because that whole part of it just got blown out of the water. But anyway, they're selling this. They're selling these. It says, our limited edition piece of Woodstock stage collection features the stage frame, the stage cube, and peace pendant, among many other groovy items still to come. They're disassembling the stage and figuring out what they could sell. This is a shame. This is such a shame. Okay. Let me read it to you without the comments. Every collectible includes letters of authenticity. So they're not ripping you off. They're not sending you a piece of wood that is not from the stage. I'm going to assume this is authentic because I just don't know what else, who would do this at this capacity. There's a gigantic force behind this. letters of authenticity, and a tamper-proof numbered hologram. What is a tamper-proof numbered hologram? To ensure you have the real piece of Woodstock magic. Now, I don't know what that means. Maybe we can find out when we look through this. Let's explore the collection and give you some prices. I don't know. Okay, I'll get through this. There's a peace pendant. The peace pendant. What is it? Oh, made of... Oh, I see. It's... The peace pendant is a peace sign in metal, and it's got wood. It's there's wood in it. The peace pendant. Wait a second. Wait. Select options. Hold on. Let me go to the peace pendant, and then we'll go back. It's a separate page for the peace pendant. Let's see what it says about the peace pendant. Did you put it around your neck? 3 days of peace and music. Yeah, sure. It doesn't say anything about it. It's a pendant. It's a pendant. It's you wear it around your neck, and the wood behind the peace sign or embedded into the peace sign is wood. That's wood. Bronze. It says bronze? What's that mean? Bronze? There's a whole bunch. Bronze or silver? Oh, I guess the type of peace sign. $99. And it says quantity. So if you only want to buy 10, you can buy 10 pendants. Oh, here it is. Right here. Always have a piece of Woodstock magic around your neck and close to your heart with this peace pendant that is encased with a piece of the original and authenticated stage from the 1969 Woodstock Festival. The wood size is 3/16 of an inch thick and 1.2 inches in diameter. The pendant size is 44 by 33 by 9 millimeters. Every pendant will include a tamper-proof hologram on the back to make sure there is no denying you own a piece of the Woodstock stage. That means you're carrying around with you the footprints, the carbon footprints of Jimi Hendrix, John Sebastian. I was going to say Hoodie and the Blowfish, but that's not who I meant. I meant Country Joe and the Fish. Hey, that's right. There's Blowfish and the Fish. Anyway, them, and, I can't even remember Jefferson. Was the Jefferson Airplane there? I don't know. It doesn't matter. Grateful Dead. Bring the Woodstock magic everywhere you go. It's Woodstock magic. I mean, how long is that going to take? Look at this. See this? This is an actual piece of the stage. I mean, who? Okay, man. They still, these are even older people. I'm medical marijuana now. Okay, let's just smoke. Let's do some weed. All piece of Woodstock stage collectibles are made to order, so allow 2 to 3 weeks for your collectible. Let's see what else they have. That's one. The stage frame. Let's see the stage frame. It says, okay, what is this? It's a frame. And inside is a picture. Let's read their description. By the way, the stage frame is only $299 each. And it says quantity. Oh my goodness. I can't get over this. Select one of the iconic images from the 1969 festival taken by a renowned rock and roll photographer, unnamed by the way, to complement the authenticated 4-inch square piece of the original Woodstock stage. This was the stage on which, and it goes again, legendary musicians. They were not legendary musicians, okay, but let's go on. Where these guys and gals performed, you know them all. This is 1.5 times 2.7 inches. That's 4 square inches for you people who don't want to do the math. The frame size is 17 width and 10 H. H? Height. With an height. $299. Each stage frame also includes a commemorative engraved plaque. Piece of Woodstock stage logo, letters of authenticity, and matching tamper-proof holograms. Everybody, I'll say it together. Tamper-proof holograms. The plexiglass covering The plexiglass covering this piece of Woodstock stage collection is cut around the stage piece so you can touch it and experience Woodstock's magic firsthand. What does that mean? Experience Woodstock's magic by holding a piece of it. First of all, this isn't that... I mean, what I could think of any number of places, but okay, all right. I'm trying to be. You'll get the rest of my attitude when you hear that part of the show that I'm going to play about that. The stage cube. Here we go. The stage cube. See what's this? The stage cube. Oh my goodness. On this, by the way, I'm going to describe to you is $499 each. You gotta wonder what that stage originally cost. In 1969, this is old wood. This is old stuff. Authentic or not? Okay. Select one of the iconic images, again, from the 1969 festival, taken by a renowned rock and roll photographer whose name, so renowned you probably know it. We're not going to tell you the name of the person. It's an authenticated 9-inch square piece of the original stage. And it says again, this was the stage which legendary musician... this stage cube includes a commemorative engraved plaque, letters of authenticity, and together, matching tamper-proof holograms. The removable plexiglass cube covered this piece of Woodstock stage collectible lets you touch the stage and experience the Woodstock's magic firsthand. Think about this for a second. This is a piece of wood from 1969 in a farm in upstate New York, stepped on by rock and roll players. They sweated on it. They did everything. They're all high. They had, okay, but to say this, touch the stage and experience Woodstock's magic firsthand. They make it sound like if you touch it, you know, Jimi Hendrix is going to walk in, Jimi Hendrix is going to, you may also like, stage frame, piece pendant. Oh, these are the only two they have? Hey, remember, it takes 2 to 3 weeks for your order. So this, it costs each of these, and you can pay by PayPal, and there are more payment options. The cube, and again, it's the piece of wood inside of a cube, a plexiglass cube, but the wood is encased. And there's a stand, a wood stand. The wood stand is not a piece of the stage. The wood stand. wood stand. If it could stand. The wood stand, oh my goodness. It says Yasger's Farm. Remember Mr. Yasger? That was his farm. August 15th to the 18th, 1969. A couple of days I'd like to forget, although I can't because I have to talk about them. Actual piece of the authenticated, oh my gosh. Are those the only three pieces? Let's see. Shop. Piece of stage collection. Full collection. Here's the full collection from the stage. Oh my goodness. Let's see if you can run through this quickly. Piece of Woodstock stage collection. Oh, wait a second. Why are they... There's only three. The stage frame, the piece pendant, and the stage cube. Well, I mean, the stage is only so big, right? No. So, what do you think these things are going to be worth in like 10 years? Let's put it this way. The stage cube, now worth $499. That's the most expensive piece of the stage item that is offered. In 10 years, that's going to be worth $29.95. Yes. I just don't get this. This marketing is, you can also get the New York State Thruway Closed Man t-shirt. And I don't think that has anything on it. It's not made of anything related to the actual materials at Yeager's Farm. There's no wood. There's no piece of the stage on there. Piece by piece t-shirt. Piece by piece. And the hippie emoji t-shirt. Oh my God, that's disgusting. That's embarrassing. That's $25 for each one. You could also, oh my God. God, shop. Where is this place? It's in Montebello, New York. What do they have here? Music? They play music here? From the, here's some canned heat. We forgot canned heat. Here, what is this? You can play music from here on this thing? Piece of Woodstock stage? That's it. Those three things. Shop. So if I say shop. Oh, wait, we frequently asked questions here on this, thing here about the collectibles. How do I know I will receive a piece of the original Woodstock stage? So for those of you people who are skeptical, you hippies, you ex-hippies, you old people, you Social Security collecting bunch. Hey, it's my generation. So I am allowed. And well, anybody's allowed to say anything, but I was there. And you're going to find out how horrible. Every piece is collected. The letters of authenticity. Wait, I'm clicking on letters of authenticity because there's a link. Here's what it says. Wood Science Consulting is a place in Millbrook, New York. Not for duplication. Reason, plywood authentication. Wood Science Consulting was retained to authenticate plywood manufactured in the late 1960s. That was, apostrophe's in the wrong place. In the late 1960s, that was associated with the construction of the stage of Woodstock Festival in 1969. On December 2nd, 2017, two pieces of plywood were brought to the offices of WSC, that's this place, for inspection and examination. During that inspection, the following observations were noted. I'm not going to read this whole thing. It's gigantically long. Gigantically long? It's the species of plywood was, who would have thought we'd be sitting here on this show how many years later talking about the plywood authentication? Small sections of the samples were examined microscopically with a light microscope. Douglas fir is positively identified by the presence of resin canals. What? Piscioid pitting. Piscioid pitting? And the presence of the spiral thickenings in the trachydes. Trachydes? The presence of spiral thickenings in the trachydes. That's right. Positive. Oh my goodness. On plywoods, one plywood sample contained a certified American Plywood Association trademark stamp. Tested DFPA quality standard grade and a span rating of 48.2, photo 3, which is historical. The stamp on the sample, this goes on. Other plywood samples, this is the letter of authentication. And it's before it's signed by the guy, whatever, the company. It says, if you have any questions or comments, please do not hesitate to contact me. I don't have to contact you. I'm broadcasting these comments right here. About the stage, I go to the place about the stage. Okay, let's do a little bit about how big was the stage? What is so special about the stage other than, what's the physical construction? You know, plywood. What is it physically? I'm going to tell you. It was 8,000 square feet. Not overly large by outdoor concert or festival standards, by the way. It took several weeks for local craftsmen to construct this. But on those 8,000 square feet proudly stood rock royalty. And now it serves as a glorious lasting symbol of an entire generation. Bum, bum, ba-dum, bum, ba-dum, bum. I'm seeing stout-hearted men. Give me some stars who are rock history stars. Oh, my God. I can't believe this. From the stage, one could see 500,000 people, one of whom was Frank Cotolo, who now does Cotolo Crumbs, crammed up the hill, off to the sides, and even on the other side of the road. On that stage, you could feel the rain pelting you from the sky. Where else is the rain going to come from? Anyway, literally bathing the entire crowd in a unity that would never end. Oh, it ended. It was ended. And if you were in that crowd when it was raining, believe me, you were not going, oh, God, I'm in here. I'm in rock history. Unless you were completely blown out of your head with LSD or whatever. From the stage, you felt the excitement of the music mixed with fear that the towering speaker stands could give way at any time. I can't believe that they wrote that. You believe that? I want to tell you something. None of us that people I talk to and people that in the crowd, to be in the mass of humanity that was the crowd of Woodstock, these crazy people who felt some kind of vibration, which I didn't feel. These people, look out, you know, those, if the wind gets any worse, those speaker rafters are coming down. Nobody was worried about that. From that stage, you felt the excitement of the music mixed with fear. The music was mixed with, let me tell you what the, oh God, I don't want to do the whole show. I'm going to play the other parts of the show and you'll hear what I'm talking about. And here it is. Listen to this, because I was there at this particular moment on that said John Sebastian. I was there when John Sebastian was on, and I wasn't there all 3 days now, mind you. There was no way to last 3 days. Okay? Some people did. I didn't. My friends I was with did not. On that stage, John Sebastian sheepishly walked out and played an unexpected set that gave everyone pause and even some needed reflection. This is what other people were vomiting. Country Joe gave the yang to Sebastian's ying with the fish cheer. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young had their second gig on that stage while Joe Cocker and the band both lit up an exhausted Sunday crowd. It supported a dancing sha-na-na so early in the morning, and it breathed its last with Jimi Hendrix's iconic set, which included the Star Spangled Banner. Listen to this. A host of people likely saved some lives with key announcements from that stage about what to ingest and not. Where the food was. Okay, we're going to get 100. I got to find now. You can buy. I'm telling you, I can't read the rest of this. It makes me want to vomit. Built in 23 days, the stage, which parts you can buy in some shape or other as a, under the supervision of another legendary lighting director. You know, the legendary, they're all legends. Forget about Hercules and Robin Hood. These guys like Chipmunk, who helped to make it. Fans arrived several days before the stage was completed. Dismantling the stage took 3 weeks. Selling the stage took 50 years. What did they do? Cut it up? When did they cut it up and leave it somewhere? Let's move on. I want to give you a little bit of what I talked about, because I cannot tell you right now any better than I said back then. In 2009, where am I moving? I got to cue this up. By the way, this is Cattolo Chronicles. My name is Frank Cattolo. Man's name is John's the title of the show. I got to cue this up to a certain point. We're going to play what I told you back then, the story of me at Woodstock and how this really, really goes. I have to go to 46. Where do I have to go? Make cue it. 5132. 51, you know how I do this, right? 5132. Come on. 5040. 5059. 5131. That's exactly where we are. Here we go. This is from the show Cattolo Chronicles. It's from me, Frank Cattolo, my show about Woodstock. Being there. And this is in 51 minutes into it. Just about perfectly. If it goes to the end, but I could cut in at any given time. Don't go away. My name is Frank Cattolo. Man's name adorns the title of the show. I'm not going to do the mid-show, music or anything. It's time for you to just listen. This is how it was and that show and what I said about being at Woodstock and being close enough to that stage now being sold. I got to look around. You know, I might have a piece of something from that day that I could sell on eBay for $9 million or something. Here am I back then. I don't think I feel any different about Woodstock than now. Oh, then. Yeah, now. I don't feel any different now. By the way, you're welcome for the wonderful radio. So everybody, and the thing was like, look, you don't get a ticket, you're not getting in. That's, you got to remember, this is before the 15th. That's it. They said, you're going to get a ticket, you're not getting in. And you have to pay for parking and stuff like that. So it was imagined to that it was going to be, because there were, how many? Upstate New York, I don't remember Max Yeager's farm. I don't think I have it here at all. I didn't figure to look at how large the land was. But they went up there, all the guys, the promoters, and the only thing they did, made the stage, built the stage, this giant sound system, and they were just expecting people to come in, we take their tickets, and go. And that's what I expected also. And I figured, okay, so let's go for a day or what have you. And, you know, what the heck? It'll be completely controlled. It'll be, and it'll be just outside a concert and all these groups together, and you don't know when they're going to be on, but they'll be on, and blah, blah, blah. To my memory, that's what happened. And I looked forward to going. We were going in someone's van. It was just guys. It's too bad, too, because, it was just guys. And I think it were four guys, and maybe, some bands are, who's, a car? Maybe it was Larry's car. You know? So I don't remember that. But that doesn't even matter. Because they found a way to get there. And we left on the 15th. And we had tickets. We bought the tickets. I think we bought it for 2 days. But we didn't intend to stay. Not that it mattered. Maybe we bought it for 1 day. And then when we were going to stay, we would buy another one. But we knew we were going. We went. We brought. We didn't bring much. Because we weren't really intending on staying overnight. But we had a bag full of them. I remember this too. Because I remember the Vienna sausage. You know, I'd never had Vienna sausage, in Spam. You know, the canned stuff. We just brought some of this canned stuff. And we figured, look, we'll buy the rest. We want to eat something. They're going to argue what? They're not going to have food? They're going to have food. They're going to have drink and food and everything. So off we went. Heading to Camp Under the Stars, if we were. Here's what it said. This was the place to be. The largest rock concert ever conceived. Because there were going to be 3 days and tons and tons and tons of artists. Who were coming? Artists. Well, you know, groups. 3 days, not hours of music. Camping Under the Stars. Right? Saves, it said, months to plan the trip. Save some money. Create believable lives for parents, bosses, loved and unloved ones. Round up your travel buddies or lover. And hit the road, party! This is what it said. Now, upstate, the people up there, the people, the promoters, everybody who put this together, and they were ready. And the community was ready. The city, the county, the state officials, they all thought they knew what to expect, and they felt confident that they were going to handle the traffic, the crowd, the sanitation, medical, because they knew it was going to be a lot of people. They knew how many tickets they sold, and there were thousands. But they knew that they had that under control. And they even thought they had, all the unexpected problems, because they brought up things, okay? And they were prepared. But here's what they were not prepared. And this is where it broke down big time. This is where legend began to take over history. I'm going to get into history and throw away the legend. This legend took over. Here's what happened. We were driving up there, and we hadn't heard anything other than we were going, what's the second? We got a ticket. I keep checking it. Where are your tickets? Where are your tickets? Here are my tickets. You got the tickets? I got the tickets. And we discovered something was wrong, different, unexpected, really unexpected. When we came within 25 miles of the site, and there were cars everywhere. There weren't just cars everywhere. Our car got up to a certain point and had to stop because the cars in front of us weren't even moving anymore. We were moving very, very, very slowly. We didn't learn this till later. But we got to a point where the cars did not move. Now, the history, it says something like 20 miles, and I think it was less. Because I remember calculating when we were there. Within 14 miles of the site, 14 miles, we could not drive one more inch because the cars had stopped moving in front of us for 14 miles.
Well, first thing I thought was like, well, what do we do? Turn back? Now, turning back was an option, but I don't know how you would have done it if you got within 14 miles. Because remember, we weren't at the end of this line. There was still coming behind us. That's where it might have been 16, 17, 18 miles. Maybe it was 20. I don't know how long it was, but I mean, there were canal cars behind us and they weren't moving because we weren't moving. We got to the point where it wasn't moving. They weren't moving in front of us for 14 miles. I know that number because I counted with the help of some landmarks how far it was that we walked. Okay, it was Larry. There was the other two guys and me, and it was like, well, what are we going to do? If we walk away from the site, what do? We get the car is here. How are we going to come back and get the car? We either stay here, and believe me, as loud as rock music could be, you weren't hearing it 14 miles away from the site. Here were these. We had no choice. We had to walk. And what this was like, this was an exodus. This looked like, in a sense, if you've ever seen the flee from Egypt of the Jews, as is depicted in like, you know, the Ten Commandments. That's what was going on here. In fact, I got news for you. A lot of people were dressed like that too. This looked like the great Hebrew nation because everybody was dressed, you know, like they were slaves, like they were just carrying on their back whatever they had. On our way to the site, 14 miles. Okay, I'm 19 years old. I can walk 14 miles. Remember, this is not like comfortable weather either. This is August, deep August, in upstate New York. We only have X amount of liquids on us because we did not prepare. And we're wondering like, well, what's this? Are there that many people there? What about our bring your tickets? We still bring our tickets, right? Because we don't know. We have no idea. But we do know that we're walking 14 miles. Now, right off the bat, because I just have no choice. I know I'm going because now I have no choice. If it was up to me and I had my druthers, I mean, I would have said, and there was a way, you know, to get back, I would have said, let's go. There's going to be madness there. Because I thought like I thought. That's what I saw. That's what I forecasted. If there's 14 miles worth of cars here and all these people are going to the site, something's got to be wrong. I'm in wrong in the sense that this, we're not going into a controlled area. We are not going into an area where the city, county, state officials are all getting exactly what they expected. We are not. We are moving into the horde of our generation. This is like holy Christmas. I wonder if I was one of those Hebrews, if I would have went through the desert 40 years, this is 14 miles, felt like 40 years on our way to Woodstock. And already I'm feeling the weight of this experience. I have no idea how bad this is actually going to get. Top of the second hour, July 30th. Why'd you get this time?
Thank you.
That's where we are. My name is Frank Atolo, and the man whose name adorns the title of the program. I am chronicling my memories of 1969. I am eyewitness. I am a witness. I have come to justify Woodstock. Woodstock. I'm walking 14 miles, and this is beyond endless. It is beyond hot. Every other, we're already dehydrated. I mean, you've got a mile and this is dehydrated. Not only is this walking, because it's walking 14 miles, and we don't know when we start walking. This is an endless 14 miles per se. And we don't know how far we're going until we get there. And however far we go when we get there, we know that we're going to have to get back by walking back. At least we think. That's what we think. But we're not thinking. We're thinking straight forward ahead. Now, by this, now Larry, the man who has perpetrated, I'd not say perpetrated is the wrong word, the man who has fueled this trip is already in great disfavor with us, the other three guys. Because, you know, he's already, I swear he must have dropped acid before we even got out of the car and parked. And he has with him fluids, but, you know, he has with him fluids, not, he had a lot of tequila. He used to like tequila. And so, I knew him well enough. I knew well enough. Look, I'm an idiot. You know, I knew well enough. I'm not going to drink tequila on the way. I drink as much water as I can, try to get more, what have you. But remember, here I am, and here we are. Now there's four of us, and we're walking. Those of us who are conscious, and I'm saying that because Larry is just like, he's already fallen into the great generation trap. And he's already become one of the majority of this generation. They're just there for the ride. They don't have an inkling of the substance of what's going on. Okay? Because they're just there for the ride. And the only ones to do is get high and get drunk. And no, it couldn't have been any generation. Larry would have fallen into it and done it. Okay? But he was outnumbered because the other three of us were, I must say, remaining rather sane about this, and I didn't want to get involved in flipping out, okay? Because this was tough for me. It was like I already don't want to be here, and now I'm walking. And remember, we're not walking alone. We're walking with thick, four, three, six people thick, and just following this current of people that is going through up through the roads. And then the public roads, because there's no driving. And then everywhere you look around you, left to the right, more streams of people. There's rows and rows and rows of people. This is very much reminds me of the Jews leaving Egypt. And it's that hot. It's just as hot. I am not happy. And I don't remember exactly getting there, but I do remember suddenly it was kind of soft. The ground became softer. I was like, uh-oh, okay? Because this was going to be not just a trek into an area you would just never be with this many people. This would be, okay, but this was also going to be a natural disaster, because there was going to be rain, or by the time we got there, see, that maybe there was rain. I don't remember the chronology of these events, but I know that suddenly the ground got softer and we could see the stage, and this would be like, well, you could see the stage from a long time away, but by the time we got to there, like I say, within a mile of the actual site of the farm, the ground was now getting muddy, and it was obvious. And we look around because we had our tickets. It was obvious that nobody was going to be stopping us to get our tickets. Now, right there, in essence, one of my friends was particularly pissed at the fact that he wasn't going to get his money back either. He had money like, oh God, if we knew this, we wouldn't have put the money out. You know, this is the last thing on my mind, though, but because I'm going like, oh, my goodness, look at this place. It's bubbling over. It's bubbling over. And, you know, along the way of this 14 miles, I swear to you this happened. If you've seen the movie, you know that you could see older people walking. There's tons of footage, tons of
feet of footage, tons of footage, tons of miles of footage. There's miles of footage. Maybe they weigh tons. I don't know these miles of footage. But along the way, when you're walking there, someone walked up to me. Now remember what I said. A lot of these people, they're not drinking water and liquids. They don't have a lot. They didn't bring a lot. They didn't expect to need as much, in as much of a personal arsenal of food and beverage. You didn't think you needed that much. I mean, you know, this is going to be incredibly commercial, even though it would be expensive to buy hamburgers and hot dogs. So you knew it, but you brought some money. Okay. But there's, God, these people were, and I don't know how many had already dropped acid and were smoking the weeds, but you could smell along the road. You don't smell acid, but you could smell in the thick air. Here you are trying to breathe as you walk miles and with very little liquid, and you could smell the pot. And there aren't cops walking around looking through people's pockets, and there's no way. How could you arrest hundreds of thousands of people? Because this is what was happening. Some guy runs up to me and he's kind of harried and he says, "Amen." You know, it's funny. Every time I do an imitation of those people from my generation who are kind of like, you know, flipped out. Because I made a character of this years ago on radio. But I always do one particular characterization. It's Dennis Hopper's character, which is a caricature in itself. In Apocalypse Now, the photographer guy that he plays, who's just wandering around Kurt's strange little tribe and village. And so every time I do it, and every time I explain it, if I want to go into a character, I do this. But this is the voice of that generation to me. Okay, this is the voice, the sad voice of those who just went along for the ride, got the albums, just went on this trip, this I don't know how many year, this acid trip, this unreal journey into something. Into escape. That's what it was, really. Here's what this guy runs up to me. He goes, Hey, man, have you seen my friend, John? And he's like, I don't want to be touched, okay? First of all, just don't touch me. That's number one, don't touch me. All right? I'm hot, it's hot. I don't need your hands all over me. I don't know where they've been. You know, and so I went, "No, John, who? Huh?" He actually says this. This is how high, this is how crazed this person was at the time. He said, "My friend John," he said, he's kind of about this tall and he's got long hair and a mustache. It's like, yeah, I've seen him and his 15,000 brothers that are walking around here. Maybe I'm him. I don't know. So you shake him off like a spider, you know, and he's just running around, just stopping people. I mean, he might not have even had a friend. He might have been tripping so bad he thought he had a friend, John. But he's like, yeah, right. He had long hair and a mustache. Well, that narrows it down. Already, when that happened, and I wasn't even at the site, I was already cynical, and I was already pissed, and I was already uncomfortable, and I didn't want to be there. I went, look at this. Look at this. But around me, and there was this other feeling. There was this feeling of, and this is the feeling that you'll hear about from so many people. You're certainly going to hear about it from the acts, I would imagine, and then the rock and rollers and people who were there. Because they, you know, I came in by helicopter, and it was just one big event to them. And they got to play in front of all these people. Turned out to be 500,000. Who's counting? Right. And so the acts, well, of course, you know, they're tripping, they're doing whatever they want, but they're isolated, insulated. They've got food. They've got bathroom facilities. They've got all the luxuries that celebrities are afforded because they're on that side. But in the swarm of people in this, what is now known as what? The Woodstock Nation? What's going on here is insane. It is not, for my money, a great gathering of love and peace. Now, they'll tell you, and this is true, that that there were only a few drug busts, and I, don't ask me how that, because people were tripping out, and there were not medical facilities for 500,000. This is what happens. Once we got there, and we're walking in the mud, and we realize that if, however long we're going to stay, all we have to eat and drink is what it's what we have on us, which is not much because we didn't come prepared for that. Okay, but they said that there were only a few drug busts. No reports of burglary or violent crime in the surrounding communities, even though some of that was trespassing, and that's a crime because it was in the overflow of 500,000 people on Max Yeager's farm. Where was Max Yeager? And was he in Paris? He wasn't at the house. I don't know. 500,000, this is what they say. Here's 500,000 young citizens, and this comes from a celebration, written celebration of Woodstock. On the positive side, 500,000 young citizens were virtually left on their own and discovered the words sharing, helping, consideration, and respect to be very powerful. Thousands left. Well, we don't talk about left. Okay. That's what they found. Okay. Now, granted, you could talk to anybody. You could say anything to anybody, and they were all there. I didn't see any fist fights. Okay, great. 500,000 people got together. There's no fights. But you know what? This is survival. This is nothing. This has very little to do with because there's people who are freaking out. There's people who are dancing freaking out. There's people fainting. There's people, they don't have enough medicine for the people who are, getting sick, and you could understand people getting sick because it's nauseating out there. Now when we realized we needed water, and I needed water. What am I going to do? Someone around me, said, there's, you know, so where's the water? Where do you get water? And there's a truck. And we're bringing in these trucks with water. And they had these faucets on the side of them, and they couldn't get the trucks close enough, so people had to walk to the trucks because you can't. I mean, people were now with their blankets, their tents. They were now laid out on the mud because it had rained, and it would rain again. Okay, and so they're all there, and some of them have children and these kids, and the kids' faces are painted. You know, they're like this is the it's like the template for hippie. And I'm there, and I'm standing in the mud, and my sense is I don't belong here. That's my sense. This is horrible. I don't want to learn. I don't think there's anything snotty about this, because this is just, to me, it's like, oh my God, look at all you people. For what? To see the Jefferson airplane? Are you guys nuts? To see Crosby, every one of these I'd seen when I'd go to the Fillmore during the downtown, the Fillmore. We'd go to the Fillmore. We'd see all the concerts we wanted to see, all the acts before they became gigantic and went to stadiums. The point is, at the Fillmore, even though there were people there in the audience who dropped acid and smoked, but it was like there were bathrooms. And there were, there weren't a lot of fights there either. And I think that if you looked at all the Fillmore nights that there were concerts, you would also say, hey, there was no violence. There was no, everybody had that sense of like, hey man, be cool, you know? Okay, that's fine. Except that did not take away from the color of the ugliness of this whole site. Just because 500,000 people showed up and they were only supposed to be whatever, 100,000 or 50,000, it didn't take away from the fact that this was uncomfortable. This was a trial by fire. I did not come here to be tested. I did not come here to walk another 2 miles to get a cup of water. And that's what I did. That's when I knew something was really wrong. That there is a great divide between those heroes who people talk about, who people came to see, who for a million years would not have come to see, then they weren't in the audience. There was a great separation. There was a wall no one could climb over. I mean, the Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and the Who's, and all these guys, and the Jimi Hendrix, they didn't walk out among the people. They stayed with their vans. They stayed inside of their own little world there. Where they had water, where they had any kind of beverage, where they had food, where they had everything. What about sharing? Did they enjoy being part of the swarm? Did they walk among the 500,000? Did they see what was going on? Did they try to help? No, they didn't do any of that. Maybe they say things like, oh, we played for nothing, though. We wound up playing for nothing. Yeah, right. Being in the movie, and the thing, and then getting the exposure. I mean, give me a break. It's the way I was feeling. It's like, come on. This is not one great nation. Later, Joni Mitchell would write a song called Woodstock, and she would be right in there. She would just be right in there with the peace and love and everything. Just because there were no fights. Just because, now wait a second, there were two deaths, but there were also two births. So women went there on the precipice of who are those two kids who were born there? What are they going to remember? They're going to be told that this great offering of peace and love and music went on when it was just a big, bad concert. It was an overblown it's going to be over fantasized forever. I walked over a mile. It felt like 10 more miles to get a cup of water in one of these trucks that had these sprockets and faucets on the side. I was knee deep in mud. And I said, you know what? Aside from the fact that I'm not being shot at, and I had no idea while I was there, okay, I was no idea that someone wasn't going to take out a gun and start shooting. Okay, it didn't happen. But I mean, here I was, a man who had gotten out of going to Vietnam, a kid, gotten out of going to Vietnam, went to college. I was in college at the time. Here I was walking miles in mud to get water. This was one of the reasons I didn't want to go fight in Vietnam. Believe it or not, it is. It wasn't just that I could be shot and killed. Any war, you could be shot and killed. Even if you have the greatest pieces of equipment and you're not out in the jungle, I did not want to walk in mud knee deep and in a forest and be with all these people who I didn't know. And for all I know, I didn't want to go through all this. This is not my idea of fun. I don't care about the generation. Let me tell you something about that generation. Where are a lot of them now? We'll talk about that too. But remember who was there? Everybody took advantage of Woodstock from every angle. Here's what I'm talking about. Who were there? There were anti-war protesters. Okay? And who else was there? Vietnam vets were there. See? Whole point. Okay? So it wasn't just, you remember Altamont? Altamont was a West Coast concert kind of Woodstock thing, and there's a movie about that called Gimme Shelter, because the Rolling Stones were there, and the Rolling Stones decided to use Hell's Angels as their bodyguards. They always had a little bit extra going on upstairs, didn't they, those Stones? Okay, and someone did die. Someone was murdered there, okay? That was a very, very, and they thought it was a very bad thing. Altamont was murdered. Okay, yeah, no, but I don't want you to think Woodstock. Just because there were no murders, and there were two deaths, and there were plenty of people freaked out beyond belief. Who knows how many got crazy and nuts. But I mean, I'm there and I'm going, I paid to be here. I walked 14 miles, now I'm walking 2 miles. And no one else is complaining. Me, you know, and I didn't want to get high to be able, because that would not help me. It would not help me. I knew it. It would not help me overcome hunger, thirst, and discomfort beyond belief. Now, as far as those acts are concerned, those great rock and roll acts, they were very far. They were little guys and gals. I'm telling you, I'm making a little thing with my fingers here. They were little guys and gals. I could see them. They were so far away from the stage, we couldn't even get close enough to the stage. Could we hear them? Yes, we can hear them. Big deal. I remember seeing John Sebastian when he went on at Woodstock. Just him and his guitar, right? And this is what was that. I remembered, because I used to see John Sebastian at the Cafe Agogo and at the Bitter End, two places in the Greenwich Village, where I used to go
for late night shows in Greenwich Village, and I used to sit in a table that was directly in front of the stage. And it was like, I almost felt like I knew him. And we had talked once in a while, but the point I'm trying to make here is that I was comfortable. They served me drinks. I sat there. I paid to come in. I was comfortable, and I heard the music. And the crowd was not. I wouldn't feel like part of the crowd when it's that intimate. You don't feel like a member of this sweeping, numberless bunch of dirty, filthy people. I don't care if they know about shit. They learn sharing, helping, consideration, and respect. And here I am watching John Sebastian, the same act, from like, and this must be another mile. He must be a mile away. Granted, it's a great sound system. Big deal. I'm sitting, standing in mud. I'm sinking in quicksand here. I'm thirsty, I'm hungry, and all the John Sebastian music in the world is not going to make me feel any better. I'm not looking around and seeing everybody and going, oh, God. And now, because I'm thinking, like, what if I have to go to the bathroom? Where is there a bathroom? Oh, bathrooms. I don't know how many people just did it. How many? I mean, because there were no facilities. And here I was, and I went, oh, man. Let's take a quick show. You're listening to Cotolo Chronicles. My name is Frank Cotolo, and the man who joins the title of the program. And I'm one of the people who was at Woodstock that weekend, who did not believe there was a new Woodstock nation, and who did not like whatever that nation was telling me it was, and saw the hypocrisy of the whole darn thing. I'm going to turn on my cell phone here right now and see if anybody texted me while we're here. Because remember, not a lot, less people listen. You know, I might get texts during the week because people are listening to this on their iPods, iPhones, or, you know, more people get this show that way. And so I'm going to get these random messages. No one is texting me. Okay, fine. Replenish your Protestant. Did you hear what I was just saying? Replenish your precious bodily fluids is what I was trying to say. Let's do that right now as we. I didn't have my Yukon Jack. You know why? I'll tell you why. You don't know why. Because I had I had two shots of bourbon. It's great bourbon that I still have left over from something. And still here. I just decided to have that with my coffee. And then the coffee's, that's all gone for now, but we still have almost a half hour left of this program. And, so I didn't have that, but I want you to know that whatever you have, man, when you talk about replenished precious bodily fluids, that's like, there it is. I mean, this was dehydration city out there, the Woodstock. And when I got the amount of water, all the amount I could, that's all I could have. It's all I could have. I got more water. We got more water. Larry didn't need more water. He was just freaked out. And he was doing, you know what? He was embarrassed. This is really, to me, it was embarrassing. Here I was. He was like, hey, did you ever see the movie Woodstock? You know, these people were standing up and dancing. You know the old thing about dances if nobody's looking? These people just flipping out. And there's not one of them who's not high. Because if you're in your right mind, you're sitting there going, where's my meal? How am I going to eat? I don't feel well. you don't have it covered. You haven't masked the pain of being there with drugs. You're sitting there going, oh, my God. And it's difficult to trying to make the best of it. That's the thing. So I'm going to make the best of this. How long are we guys staying? How long are we staying? They went, I don't know. We have enough Vienna sausage for the night. And, of course, you're thinking like, oh, my goodness. There's also a 14-mile hike back. Maybe more. Because, you know, once we were there, how did we know? How did we know that beyond the site, there weren't another 15 million people who couldn't get in? How did we know that everyone from all over the country didn't line up behind us? Because we don't have any, there's first of all, no TV, nobody brought a radio. Some people had radios. And I was walking around looking at people. And that was the most, I mean, I was people watching and looking around and wondering what the heck I could possibly get from any of them that would help me. They talk about sharing. You want to share? Hey, man, we ain't got no more water or we'd give you some. No, we don't have any food. We're not hungry, though. Here,
You want a toke? And of course, you could lose your friends very easily, just like that guy who couldn't find his friend. And if he ever got to the site and found that there, that, you know, just about everybody had long hair and mustaches and beards. Who were there? Anti-war pro. So again, this swarm of the generation is not pure in itself either, because he was taking advantage of it. There's black militants there taking advantage, and then these pockets, these isolated pockets, like you're at some kind of a street festival, and there are these kiosks, okay? So they go over to the black militants who are in one area, you know, and they're all, and they're, you know, their fists are up in the air, and they're there, and so, and what I'm saying to you is that there is a polarization. This great nation? Oh, no, no, there's a polarization in it, and there's people trying to make their points, because it's their point, and there's anti-this and anti-that. There's not a, there's, you know, and there's groups of gays and lesbians, then they're getting together. There's anti-gays. And they don't want to be near the gays. So, right? I said, so they're about peace and love. Okay, there's no fights, but they're there also. There's drug advocates. People who are legalized pot, legalized pot, LSD, take a trip, go on. There's people for the government. There's people that are going to like, yeah, we're fighting, we're in a war, and a war is what we got to do to war, or communism. And there's the anti-war guys, you know. Country Joe and the Fish up there singing, right? One, two, three, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. Yeah, right, well, you know, it feels like Vietnam. This is training. But as far as I'm concerned, this is horrible. And of course, most of them are dumb, just here for the music. That's the group. I'm just here for the music. They're the ones. That's the fringe generation. They're the people who are making up most of this. You know, if you're a musician, if you're really into the music, it's pretty hard to enjoy it under the circumstances, because you're more concerned about your natural body functions. And so it doesn't matter. I remember I saw groups, yeah, right, I heard them and they were there, and, you know, but I, you know, if I knew there was a movie coming out, and this was, and if I had an inkling of what I was going to go through, I'd have waited and watched the movie. Why be put through all that, you know? The group I'm with, there's a problem, because Larry just wants to stay. He just wants to stay, and he takes every piece of, he's walking around smoking with other group people and stuff like that. And it's like, yeah, I don't want to be any part of it. I mean, granted, I'm looking at the chicks and I'm looking around, but it's like, there must have been a lot of free love and everything going on there, but I sure didn't find any. I'll be honest with you. Didn't happen for me. There was a lot of stuff going on, but a lot of people had gone with people. And with these, so the 500,000 was not just this one big embroidered hippie blanket of people. As I said, there were all these pockets, and there were these people who came with one another, and they were doing it with, they stayed within themselves. Sure, they were sharing. I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll help you this, I'll give you what crumbs I have, I'll share this and like that. But they were all staying with themselves. This was like just a bit, this was like any neighborhood. This was like a community in the sense that everyone was living there. Everybody had squatted their ground. They were living there for however long. Okay. But they weren't really interacting. Man, when I hear these people talking, the artists talking about how, you know, how incredible it was there. And when they talk about, I mean, you know, the Joni Mitchells and stuff, who talk about having the Woodstock Nation. We were 500,000 strong. Time we got to Woodstock. Whatever, peace and love and all that. I'm not saying peace and love is junk. I'm just saying it was like, this was subterfuge. To me, this was the cultural apocalypse of the 60s. It was over. The 70s, I didn't know what to expect. And it did linger. And the whole rock and roll thing, and I mean, it lingered, and drug thing lingered. But this was putting them all together in this big farm. The separation, very defined to me. Believe me, you know, there weren't enough. Let me tell you something. And he goes, nobody's going to tell you this. There weren't enough security people. There weren't enough, just call them security people. weren't enough local police, all of that stuff. But let me tell you this. There was no want for security for those cherished, wonderful icons of rock and roll. The Sebastians and the Jefferson Airplanes and the Hendrixes and the Havens and all those people up there. The Donovans and the... They were fine. That's where we were driving in. Not one of them was thirsty. You know, we say, what is this? Well, you know, this means something to me. It's always means something to me. Because apart from watching old, you know, English wars, old battles, Japanese battles, aside from the, you know, the general himself who's got to stay alive, so he stays behind and, you know, he's doesn't, you know, particularly fight because he's orchestrating stuff. But, you know, he has already. He has been there. He has been among the soldiers. That's how he got to be general. But aside from all that stuff, you know, this partaking in the atmosphere doesn't mean staying aside. Staying apart from it. Staying in your own little room there. If this is just another gig to some of these guys, that's fine with me. You know, they came in, they played, they left, that's fine. But the ones who were going to talk in the next 2 weeks about the great Woodstock, and they were there, and they played, and this watched as 500,000 people just loved one another and took care of one another. And it's like, yeah, right, okay, pal. You didn't come out. No, you didn't come out and see any of us. You didn't come out and share any water with us. You didn't come out and do anything with us. You just stood there because you were better or whatever. I mean, you know what? Is that bitter? Am I not supposed to be bitter? I just hated the fact that those guys up there were getting, I had to walk 2 miles to get a cup of water. And Stephen Stills was back there getting as fat as he could possibly get, adding more weight to himself. And would continue to. David Crosby was there, destroying his liver. Always enough. There's enough acid back there. There's enough everything. And chauffeurs. Sorry, I wasn't buying it. And I stood there when I came back from the water. And, you know, I felt horrible. I had not gone to the bathroom. I think I peed somewhere. But I held the rest inside of me. Because there was nowhere to go. And I wasn't gonna drop trow. Where would I go? There were people everywhere. I saw people doing that. Right there. And I wondered, why is anyone here? What is going on? I don't feel a part. I don't feel like your brother. I don't feel like your sister. I feel like a guy who's stuck in a giant ghetto. In a cultural ghetto. I'm not being a snob and saying, I tell you the snobs, you want to know who the snobs are? Yeah, look at them, watch, we're just sitting here watching them. No one who played at Woodstock deserved that audience. Most of them empty-headed, most of them just going along for the ride. Peace, love, and everything they said they stood for. Would in the next decade, before the next decade was done, they would abandon all of it. The greater percentage of that generation would not even understand the values they thought that they were creating. Oh, we're changing the world. We're changing the world with love and music. Mozart changed the world with music that people loved and still love and love through generation upon generation upon generation. The beauty, that was changing the world, civilization with music. Not getting up at dawn and playing the Star Spangled Banner on one guitar to 500,000 people. Who were hungry, thirsty, and felt like they were living on love, and just were in the mouth of this volcano. And it was that when it was over, could not be any better for this, other than to say, I was there. I was at Woodstock. You're at Woodstock? I was at Woodstock. Was that you? So, yeah. Was that you? You know, if you lived through the, if you remember anything about the 60s, man, then you didn't live through the 60s. All this stuff. It is so blown out of proportion. It is so fictional. It is so romanticized now. The legend is better than the truth, so they print the legend. But what bothers me, because I have a real problem with that generation, my generation, which is what I always loved about The Who, when they did My Generation and then they destroyed all their instruments. I loved that. I loved it because it was taking it all of it, the very essence of revolt and rock and roll and everything that was, it took it all to the zenith, which was destruction. You play any instruments as hard as you can, and then you just break loose, you go nuts, and you destroy it all. That was a very marked statement to me. And I saw it done in Central Park. One of the last times they ever did it, they stopped doing it. And it really had impact. More, you know. So, but The Who were up there, and it doesn't matter. I don't know. What'd they do? They drugged out. They ate. They did it. Who knows? There were groupies. There was sex. Everything. One big frickin' party for all of them. But they weren't lacking anything they needed. In a couple of weeks, you're going to hear a lot of stuff because 40 years, the 40th anniversary. Oh, I was there. I was in there. Oh, the great, the love, the peace. What a generation. What growing up. Let's listen to the music. Oh, it was great. Remember this guy. Remember that guy. Oh, God. I remember that song. It was the first time I did this. Oh, dude. Well, we all have these memories and stuff. But, you know, the essence of Woodstock, for me, became very painful in this respect. The 14... I know I saw groups and stuff. Okay, we started, we ate, we finished, we drank what we had to drink, and we saved a little bit, or felt we would get some from people along the way for the walk back. But back at the car, I remember the feeling of sitting in that car after the 14 miles back. We did not stay the night. I just said, I'm not staying the night. I don't care. I'm not staying here overnight. And it's sleeping in the muck and the crud just to hear another group while these guys are showering. I just don't think it's right. And this is a mess. And I can't identify with any of these people. My feet, my legs were so tired in that car. Somehow we managed because, and I don't remember this at all, but so we did manage to turn that car around and go back. A lot of people were going in and out. There were still people showing up the second day, third day. We were the second day, I'm sure, the third day, whatever. But, you know, there might have been 500,000 people at one particular time, but there were not always 500,000 there. The hawking going on, the things, and, you know, there was more, you know, everybody selling ideas and concepts and anti-this and anti-, it's just tiring. This is just tiring. Where are you people going to be in 5 years? At another Woodstock? Living in the world you changed with music, love, and sharing? Drive back was horrible, but the next day, you know, here's what was great, the shower I took when I got home. I don't know how long it lasted, but it was wonderful. It was cold, it was warm. I lathered every part of my body. I felt, and as I was taking the shower, so it was cleaning, I didn't just feel like I was getting refreshed again and my body was feeling warm. I felt like I was washing off the sweat and the hypocrisy and the commercialism of the entire generation. All of them. I felt like I had, when I was done with the shower, when I got out of the shower, and I felt like, and I remember because it wasn't at my house. I had gone to where my parents were, at my aunt's house, and I showered there. They were having some kind of a barbecue or something. And I wanted some good food. You know, I went back, I was dirty, I showered. I felt like I went to Lord's and I had the water treatment and I was cured right after that shower, however long it took. And then I ate. But the great pain was yet to come. because I was not through with my experience. I had not relieved myself in many, many, many hours. And even though I had not eaten that much, and then I ate when I got back and what have you, I had the worst case of constipation. I can't say this any other way. Ever. The first time I sat down to try to do that on returning from Woodstock. And so here I was happy to have felt like I escaped my own generation. I was telling people things and nobody, I was telling how horrible this was. And, you know, most people of my own age didn't believe it. I was telling the older people how terrible. And I remember sitting in the upstairs bathroom of my aunt's house, looking outside, and the adults were there, all members of the World War II generation and World War I generation. My grandfather was alive at the time. And I was looking out down, out the window, very hot, sitting there trying to do my business. And I saw that world. I saw them, that generation. And I thought to myself, are these people so upset, so upheaved, in such pain because they believe this or they have this political view or because of this value and stuff like that? I thought, and suddenly all those faces changed into the faces I had just been with. Because I knew that, you know what, everybody, what are we going to do? What are these people going to do? They're going to go get jobs and they're going to take the paint off their face and they're going to stop taking the acid and then maybe they'll continue to smoke now and then, but they'll drink the alcohol and the alcohol will become a social drink and they're all going to be like all these people out there at this barbecue. Who's going to get older? And that's what's going to happen. The torch will be passed and it's not going to be the torch of, and what's going to happen to all those people who performed? What are they going to do? They get richer, perhaps? A house? Fatter? Like Stephen Stills? Move, buy a villa in France? Live there? All your royalties? And then come back as an oldies act? Because no matter how you do it, it's going to be an oldies act because the next generation is going to take over. You can sing the same song you did for the next 20 years. That's how you're going to make a living, if you need to make a living. Or do you still need to feed that ego even after it's gone? You'll find your audience. It's the generation that was lost in space. It's like Don McLean sang in American Pie. When he talked about the day rock and roll died, he made a great statement. A generation lost in space. And they didn't turn into anything. It says here thousands, and this I'm reading from one of the Woodstock sites, thousands left the Woodstock event with a totally different outlook on life. I did, but not like this. Not like this. I was a hippie man. I was a hippie and now, you know, just look at culture. Just read the history of pop culture from this point on, from the end of Woodstock on. And you do not see a history that continues the way, let's just compare it, as I did before. The Jews left Israel and walked across the desert for 40 years till they found the promised land. The whole story. Forget. I don't even care if you believe it or not. I'm just telling you that this compare it to this. And what began was a nation of people with traditions, with values, and an ability to want to stay together, regardless of the oppression that would continue, even though they had their own land. See, that's not what happened at Woodstock. All those people who walked to the site, stayed there and walked back. All those people participated who were supposedly members of the great Woodstock generation. A different outlook on life? What? They went to work for the government. They went to work for the post office. They went to work for, they went out and they finished college and they became whatever they did at companies and they bought stocks and they married and they divorced and they had kids. And then the kids grew up and they divorced. They sent the kids to college and the whole thing. And then they took the whole circle of life thing And they kept theirs. They kept all their memories. When I had long hair, when I was at Woodstock, when I heard that first album the first time, and when I did this. And they, and those people maybe are having trouble walking down the Hallelujah Trail. Because the Hallelujah Trail doesn't go back like that group of people. Woodstock. How are you walking down the Hallelujah Trail if you're with us as we are? We're leaving that stuff behind. Baggage, all that stuff. We're just moving on. We're moving on because that's what life is all about. To move on. And not necessarily. And then what you learn and what you take with you becomes more and more incredible. But it was not Woodstock. There was no Woodstock. Take it from me. I was there. Take it from me. I was honest with myself, which I'm not always about to do, even now. But it's tough and difficult. But take it from me. I was there, and I left that generation then. I never felt more alone than with all those people. At that place, I never felt, and it was the beginning of understanding the great betrayal, because it was not, it was just going to be business. It was just going to be business as usual. It was all business. Don't take it personally. It's only business. That's Woodstock. Don't let.
That's Woodstock. Don't let. I couldn't cut it quickly enough. Nothing I could say that's changed from what I described in 2009. But now, if you look at it differently or what have you, remember you could buy a piece of that stage. A piece of that stage, the Woodstock stage. And the fact that it's for sale, the fact that what I'm talking about, that they're selling, I think that it caps everything that was concluded about pop culture, marketing, and all those people who, all those legendary people, and whoever you are who was there or what have you. That's what that says. My name is Frank Atolo, and the man whose name adorns the title of the show. Plenty of stuff going on. Try to be with us next week for the Cotolonoscopy. I laugh saying it because I wonder how many of those people at Woodstock have had their colonoscopies. I wonder. Hey, the week after that, I hope there's good news. My name is Frank Cotolo, the man's name adorns the title of the show. Listen, you're welcome for the wonderful radio that we've given you all these years, and we're trying to continue to give you for as long as we can do that. So if you want to buy a piece of that stage, go ahead. Maybe one day they'll sell a piece of this desk. Huh? Maybe. I doubt it. Very much. Good night, Mrs. Ernst Weil, wherever you may be located. Don't forget, go to Skype. Frank Cotolo, hook up with me, be on the show, be part of the documentary. Hopefully it'll all work out. Hopefully everything will all work out. Okay. I'm going. I have nothing more to say.